Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for Cover 2 Broncos. Just a couple dudes breaking down scheme, film, and the numbers. Now, your host, Joe Rowles.
Welcome back to another episode of Cover 2 Broncos. I am Joe Rowles, and today I am fortunate to be joined by two special guests. I had the pleasure to reach out and talk to Expand the Box Scores, Cyril Penn and Paul Duncan. Welcome to Cover 2 Broncos. Thanks for joining, guys.
Woohoo! Thanks Absolutely. For having us on, yo.
Yep, thanks for having us on.
Loyal listeners, new listeners, people listening, I know that it is draft season, and you guys are keen on figuring out who the Broncos should take. I can't recommend Expand the Box Scores draft guide enough. It came out last week. I got it. Immediately, I have gone through, I poured over, I made notes. I've looked for scheme fits for just about every prospect I could find on there for the Broncos' needs. I reached out to these guys to pick their brains. I am stoked. But first, before we do that, I want to hear from you guys how you got involved with this project. Because like, I think it's the best draft guide I've seen in a long, long time for a number of reasons. First of all, the way you guys actually are grading the prospects, I love it because from a numerical standpoint, then it makes it really easy for me to have a frame of reference. So like, for example, if you think, and again, I'm not going to spoil anything, but let's say you said Trevor Lawrence's mobility was a one. Well, now I know that you think he's slow and I can judge based on what I see where you're at. We can have a discussion. I can come. So for me, what I believe a draft guide is supposed to do, it's supposed to inform, but also it's supposed to provide a frame of reference to go forward because that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to educate. And your guys' guide does that perfectly. And it's more thorough than basically every other guide I've seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, so how it started was it was me, and I was essentially trying to write scouting reports so that when I go down to the Senior Bowl, I can show whichever media and scout person that I would say that I would see and just be like, here are my scouting reports. I understand how to scout. And I tried writing a draft guide by myself, and I realized very, very quickly how difficult it is to watch hundreds of players as being one person. So I was only able to get 15 in time by the Senior Bowl, showed it to some scouts, made like a nice little booklet, got good reviews on it, but like it really wasn't getting much movement. But I also met Searle, and Searle and I both worked at Sports Info Solutions at different times. And all of the methods that that were made were just me taking what I learned from Sports Info Solutions and what they did over there, and just taking out all of the stuff that I thought didn't really make sense, or that I thought was outdated, or I thought was unnecessarily confusing, and took it out and added some stuff to make me understand, for me to be able to communicate things a little easier. And then since what we were doing was very similar, Searle was able to pick up the system real quick, and we recruited a whole bunch of other scouts who came, who were mostly the part-timers who grind at Sports Info Solutions and PFF. So that was kind of how, where the methods came from. They're NFL based, because what SIS uses is based off of what Joe Banner used to do, I believe. And there are teams in the NFL who have similar systems, we found out. And so we know that our system is based off of professionalism. A lot of us want to become NFL scouts. We want to be as professional as possible, as little fluff as possible. And we think we kind of were able to balance out the needs of the NFL people, so we can send it to NFL scouts we may have networked with, and it can still be read by fans who love football.
Yeah. And so we really wanted to give people a frame of reference with our beginning thing of the trait scale, to where everyone's on the same page. We know what this grade is, mm-hmm. so that when we're talking about a guy, we can say, oh, he's a 7 at this trait because of blah, blah, blah. And mm-hmm. somewhere in that, if it says Trevor Lawrence has a 7 short accuracy, there should be something in that report that tells you why Trevor Lawrence has that 7. There's going to be no – one thing that I would tell our scouts when we were first working on this project is, tell me why he deserves a 7. Don't tell me that he deserves a 7. Give me the how and why. Give me the process of what it takes to be there, because that's really – the process is what's going to translate better. Mm-hmm. And – one of the things that we were able to do through doing that is really give this a frame of reference for people, and put people in the position as you're a GM. Like you said, Joe, you can have that discussion. That's what the scouts bring to the table initially when they're talking to – it's the scouts, the GM, and the coaches all come together, and they have a discussion, and they hash out what they think the player really is. So this guide is us being the scouts – saying, hey, we're bringing this to you, to the public. We're putting you in the position of, now you're the GM. Now you can hash this out with us and find the decisions that you want to make. So if you're a Broncos guy, you go through this. We just gave you all the info that you need to take what you have seen of these prospects, compare it to what we have, and come to a full understanding of the player.
Yeah, and I love it. One thing that I learned from Dan Hatman with the Scouting Academy is you have to paint a picture. And you don't want to leave a lot of room for confusion, because as soon as you leave that space where people can kind of go off the grid, people end up all over the place. And that's where a lot of issues come up when teams make decisions on players. And I think that's where a lot of confusion happens for draft prospects. And that's always been, and again, I'm not trying to slam other guides or anything like that, but when they're not thorough enough, or when they do, when they leave too much up in the air, it ends up leading to fans having very, very different opinions on players. And your guy doesn't do that. It makes it very clear, this is where we're at on it. If you disagree, we can mm-hmm. You can then see where you disagree. But this is what we see. And I love that.
One of the things that I made sure to say to all of the scouts that were working on this originally is, if someone was reading this to me and I was closing my eyes, if I can't picture the player based on the strengths and weaknesses in my head, then you haven't done a good enough job. And so I think that I'm tremendously proud of the work we've done, because I think all of these 323 reports, I can picture the player after I read that. And that's how I know that our scouts did a good job.
Exactly. There are no bad reports in this book. None of them were rushed. They all got edited. They've all been reviewed. We've all had the conversations and the Google Notes editing thing of I think this is a you say it's a 6, but in the text it sounds a little bit more like a 5 kind of ordeal. And yeah, that's kind of what happens when we started like summer scouting in like June. So we were all together for a long time, and we had that time to really like train and grill and make sure everybody knows the differences between trait grades and how to explain players. And I think this is the manifestation of good prep, a good base and good preparation and working hard and actually doing it.
Yeah. And Paul and I can't be the people who take all the credit for training. There were a ton of people who helped us out. We had former NFL scouts, people who work with the CFL as position coaches, different people who would come in and talk to us about like how do we evaluate certain positions, like offensive line play. Justin Poindexter, who Matt Bookmeyer put us in touch with. Shout out to Justin because he was awesome with helping us with our understanding of certain offensive line schemes that we wouldn't necessarily have known exactly what kind of like vertical distortion you exactly want this offensive lineman to have on a certain play and whether that's wrong or right. And having the better understanding of that gave us the ability to say, okay, in this scheme that I'm seeing them play in, what are they being asked to execute and how are they executing it and what conditions can they execute it under or not?
Exactly. And having those people on, like all of us on the team, we know football, we've been watching football for a while, but there's so many details that you learn. It's like the more you learn about football, the more you learn that you don't know what you're talking about. It's so yeah, the more you learn, the more you learn that the things that you don't know. And that's why it's just so great to be able to have like these people who are like coaches and come from that background to kind of help give you new vocabulary words so you can like see what's happening on film, be able to recognize a certain technique being good or bad and put and have that be a sentence in your report. That was one of some of my favorite things is learning more and more about the finer details of football because it's just such a fun like adventure just learning more.
Well, and that's one of those things for me that's been really helpful too is because a lot of these reports, a lot of reports that I read, you know, just around the web, you get kind of an idea, but then you start to think to yourself, like, I'm very familiar with what the Broncos run, but I'm not necessarily, I haven't watched 11 games of Cincinnati. So like knowing what the Broncos run, if I read a report, if it doesn't make it pretty clear, like what they were doing, I have to go watch Cincinnati to make sure not only that, like say James Hudson looks however I hope he looks, but also that he's using techniques and he's doing things that I think will translate. And one thing I love about your guide is it lays out what he was doing for Cincinnati or what Trevor Lawrence was asked to do in the offense for Clemson. And I think for a fan, or I think for honestly anybody, I think that's really helpful because again, like most fans aren't going to watch 300 players but they're going to talk about them. And I know you guys know that and everybody has a guy, but now reading this, it gets an idea of like one other thing I really love that you guys do. And this is something the Scouting Academy does that I think is great too, is that the traits do boil down to a numerical grade. And the descriptions help to get you to the numerical grade. And what that does is it makes it so you can actually stack a board and you can see where the guy really falls. And then not only do you guys do that, but I love that the guide lays out what the trait number means and then also what critical traits go into making that grade. And I think that's it's very transparent and it makes it very easy to see how it's made.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like that was just one of the like when you scout for one team, you're going to have like your certain team methods. You're going to have the certain schemes and the certain critical traits that you look for. But when you're scouting for every team, you kind of have to like actually game plan for what exactly the traits you want to look for are and like how you want to take into account like all the different scheme fits. And I've seen it a bunch with other people's grading systems where they're almost like confined by it. Like they'll watch two different players. They'll like player A better, but they'll have player B with a higher grade because that's just the corner they kind of back themselves into with having different trait grades add up or things of that nature. But we decided to go the route, which is what I believe NFL teams do, of having your trait grades and your final grade separated, having your trait grades be comparing with the college player to where they will fit in first year on an NFL team, having the final grade be a representation of what role you would expect them to play as a rookie.
So with that in mind, and just for this, how do you guys decide on what traits were critical and what traits weren't? Or what traits were critical and what traits were secondary, not weren't?
So, yeah, we talked with a lot of different people to we had some traits in mind, like with offensive linemen. Like, we know that reactive athleticism is going to be number one. Like, we know that that's the most important thing. An offensive lineman needs to be able to mirror and match their foes. But some of the other traits, like what should be more critical, what should be more secondary, that was helped a lot by guys like Ron Selesky, who was our scouting advisor, who previously was the GM of the, the Birmingham Iron, and he was the GM of the Tampa Bay Vipers. So he had a ton of experience being able to assess players at all sorts of different positions. And he and a few other people like Mike Riddleman was a big help. Justin Poindexter again. But guys, we sent them what our traits were and asked them, hey, how do you view the traits? What do you typically look for? And then based on the feedback that we got from those 3 to 5 different people that we sent these to, we sort of organized terms of importance of what everyone thought. And then at the end, we kind of took our own liberties to decide which ones were going to be at the bottom of the critical or at the bottom of secondary. One of the things with quarterback that it was tough with is that we wanted to put leadership in the critical section, but it can be very hard to decipher a quarterback's leadership capabilities from just film. And we didn't want to be leading anyone, no pun intended with that, in the wrong direction by putting leadership as a top critical trait and saying, because we had leadership for best in class on leadership, it's Ian Book. And that's one of the reasons why we think that Ian Book is going to make a team. We don't think that Ian Book's leadership capabilities are going to make him more qualified than someone who has good decision making, like Justin Fields, our best in class decision maker, based on just the film. And we don't exactly know 100% about how good of a leader these people really are because we're not in the locker room. The one thing that we didn't have that scouts did this year, it was a pretty level playing field for guys making draft guides this year because scouts couldn't really go on the road either. Mm-hmm. So with us having coaches film, and us going to all-star events just the same way that scouts did, it really leveled the playing field in terms of like what we saw on film. But the one thing is we don't have the connections with all of the position coaches. Like even the few position coaches that we did talk to, we're not necessarily going to get the most straight answer mm-hmm. that a coach who has cultivated that relationship for the last 10 years is going to get. So there's a few things that we don't know and we can't know. And because of that, we tried to leave those sorts of things in secondary or leave them out of the traits that we looked at overall.
That makes sense. Definitely makes sense. So from there, I guess I want to talk to you about the prospects because again, like I have notes upon notes upon notes.
Yeah.
And I got to start here just because it's probably the biggest question facing the Broncos. How do you guys kind of sort out the quarterback class? And are there quarterbacks in this class that you think may be available at 9, first of all, that could step in day 1 and potentially be a starter for the Broncos? Because as of now, and I think we all probably agree, Trevor Lawrence is probably going number 1. So I don't think he's like a realistic option for the Broncos. And so like everybody else maybe, but who do you guys think could step in day 1 and start? And is there anybody that the Broncos should feasibly kind of consider trading up for, if it's possible?
Paul, give it away on Wilson.
All right. So, Trevor Lawrence is an instant franchise quarterback. We know that. We also very much like Justin Fields. I feel that a lot of the draft community is overthinking him. It's like the guy's accurate, the guy's athletic, he has a good arm, and a lot of the stuff that people are criticizing him about staring down first reads kind of falls under, well, that's just kind of what he's been asked to do at the college offense. It's kind of like, I mean, Herbert had a lot of the same issues when he was in those systems. So we consider Justin Fields the franchise level quarterback as well. I did the report on Zach Wilson, and I see why people are in love with him. He completes 30-yard go routes from the far hash, like most quarterbacks complete slants. It's just easy for him. He puts it right on the money that it's a throw that will translate to the NFL, putting the ball deep and in tight spots consistently. But he's not like the perfect prospect. I don't really see why people would have him over somebody like Lawrence or Fields, because there are real issues there. We kind of felt he trusted his arm a little too much. And like with all super spectacular tight window throws, that's like 3 millimeters away from a pick on some of these cases. So I think like some of these windows are going to be even tighter than these spectacular throws where he puts it right on the money with better players might end up getting picked. His decision-making in the pocket was kind of questionable as well. He had some, we called them like Johnny Manziel moments, but not like the good Johnny Manziel moments where he's just kind of running around in the pocket. Just, he really wants to make a play. And, you know, sometimes he can at the college level, but it's not like the kind of thing that you would expect to work at the NFL level. And his pocket mechanics are just really kind of janky. It's like his release is really nice, but his footwork was just kind of choppy. He can be throwing off his back foot or front foot, or not having his hips point the right way as often as I'd like. So while, I mean, I'd be comfortable with Zach Wilson starting as a rookie, I kind of more feel he might be one of those guys who might not win the job right away as he's kind of learning the playbook and getting his feet wet. But like the second the starter has a bad game, he's going to get kind of put out there. It's like, I really like him. I think he can do well, but there are some issues below the surface that will need to get worked out.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if Wilson is going to even make it to nine.
Yeah.
So I think your question really more revolves around whether we think that Lance or Mac Jones can be the guy. And luckily, I did the reports for both of those guys, so I have a very firm understanding of both of them. And they're both basically two polar opposite prospects. In terms of the guy that's more ready to start right away, I think it's pretty clearly Mac Jones. Mac Jones, I have described as a very accurate distributor of the football who is going to feed your playmakers and put them in optimal positions to succeed. And one of the things, Denver does have a lot of playmakers. Yes, so that's not a bad fit for him overall. Whether he should actually go ninth or not, I'm not sure. I gave him a 4 on throw power, but it's probably the highest 4 that we gave anyone on throw power, because he's a guy who can hit those 40-yard passes, and he shows the ability to throw to all fields like pretty well. But the thing is, he can't really hit those with zip. He can't really put much mustard on his throw beyond 10 yards. Even in positions where he needed to, he was unable to. And so I saw that as potentially problematic, which is the definition of our 4. While I like Mac Jones, I think he's just more of a limited guy. Now, I think 10 years ago, when the pocket passers were more in vogue and quarterbacks weren't asked to make plays out of structure as much, this is a guy who's a surefire top 10 guy who you would love to have at 9. But I think he's a guy who, he's not going to make plays out of structure. He doesn't have the athleticism you necessarily want. His throw power isn't great, but everything else, he's ready to go. With Lance, it's kind of the opposite. He's the youngest quarterback in the draft. I think he might be 21, like right before draft night. I think his birthday is in April.
Yep. He's a baby.
Yeah. He has a huge arm. Are we allowed to curse on here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's fast as shit. And he's – I honestly gave Lance a weird comparison when I first watched him. I said that he's Derek Carr coming out with Vince Young athleticism, which I think is a great player. But I think he can be a little timid. I think he tends to lock on to – he has a lot of those problems that you'll see with a young quarterback. And, I mean, when you're watching redshirt freshman tape, so those are the things you'd expect. Like, he locks in on his first read. He tucks and runs when his first read isn't there. He's not executing more than a half field read in their offense. And they're watching a guy from North Dakota State. It's tough because they're just outclassing their opponents in every facet of the game. Like, his guys are wide open. And in those games where the holes started to tighten up in the playoff games, like if you watch the championship game against James Madison, he was errant as a thrower. He was didn't have the confidence in his ability to fit balls into tight windows, even though he had previously shown on other films that he can show pretty good ball placement consistently. Like, when the windows tighten up, he's a little afraid of that. He's afraid of making those mistakes. And that's one of the reasons why he had such a low turnover rate, is that he almost refuses to put the ball in harm's way. So I think this is a guy, Lance, who has the talent to be as good as any of the 2 and 3 guys. Like, I think he can. I see why people, like some people, like our own Andy Singleton, the head of Expand the Box Score, has Lance as his number 2 guy. And, you know, Lance might have the second best talent, like just in terms of raw talent. I hate saying that phrase, but it's true. He might be the number 2 guy in this class in terms of what his ceiling can be, but he's not a guy who is starting year 1. And I think if you put Lance in, like, in with the Broncos, you'd give him that pressure to start year 1.
Yes, you would.
And I think that that's a position where he could potentially falter, even though what's around the Broncos would be good for him. If you're telling me the Broncos are taking him at 9 and they're willing to sit him for all of year 1 and still see what they have in Drew Lock, go for it. Take him at 9. But if you're going to say, hey, we're taking him at 9 and we're going to start him by game 5 because we're not sold on Drew Lock at all, then I think that that's a potential disaster. Although it could work out, but I think that's more of a 50-50 proposition.
So last thing on quarterbacks, because I have to ask because Paul set it up. If Justin Fields falls to 9, would the Broncos be stupid to pass on him?
Yes.
Okay. There's other positions, obviously. Outside of quarterback, the most obvious need the Broncos have is corner. They just cut A.J. Boye. Even before they cut A.J. Boye, it looked like a huge need. They had 10 corners start last year. Bryce Callahan has never played in a full season yet. He's actually really good. He just gets hurt a lot. And again, like, it is what it is. But he's also 30 on the last year of his deal. Like, they have a short-term need at corner, and they have a long-term need at corner. I have seen a lot of people say that this class is essentially 3 deep. Do you think that is – that's it? Like, do you think this is a bad class? Or is...
No. We think it's a good corner class. We think that in the first round it's 3 deep, sure. And, I mean, of the guys that the Broncos would even consider taking at 9, there's only 2 of them, right? It's going to be Farley or Surtain.
Yeah.
And our rap on Farley versus Surtain – is that Surtain is going to be the better player right now. He has the higher floor. He's a guy who's ready to come in and contribute. I think that in that zone match scheme that Fangio runs, he's ideal for that scheme. You would hope that he would go to a scheme where they press a little more because his technique is so good, but he doesn't have to. He's not reliant on that at all. But then Farley, who, spoiler alert, we have the higher grade on, just barely, is just the more athletic prospect with the higher ceiling. Farley has real, like, CB1 qualities. The fact that he's only played the corner position for really 2 years, high school QB who came to Virginia Tech as a wide receiver, he just looks so natural out there. His hips are so fluid. He has amazing ball skills down the field. He's got that athleticism that you want to be able to match up with guys deep. He's got size. He's a guy who has basically like every major trait that you're going to want in a guy. So Farley's probably the better player, but if you're playing a win right now and for the scheme fit, I think that Surtain is the better fit there. So that's going to be an internal debate that the Broncos front office is probably waging back and forth if they're seriously considering corner right there.
So maybe a stupid question, but I want to ask because I've had people ask me this, and you guys are going to be able to answer it in a better way than I can. Corners in the NFL play both zone and man. Like, even the most man-intensive defenses, you're still going to run some zone. So when a scout says a corner is a zone corner, a corner is a man corner, What are they really talking? Like, what are they saying? Or how does it, what does that mean to you, I guess? And I know that's kind of putting you on the spot, but.
When they're saying a guy's a zone corner, what they really mean is he's bad. that's the most rough and brutal way to put it. What I've heard is that scouts don't go to position coaches saying, hey, do you have a zone corner? Because you can find zone corners at the bottom of the draft. But guys who can actually man up, because I mean, if we're talking down the field, all zone eventually becomes man. Like yep. You're eventually manning up with guys. So if you can't do that down the field, you're going to have some struggles. That's one of the things that I've been seeing with Cam Bynum, who we have a high grade on. I think we may be the highest of anyone on him. But he is a guy who really only fits in a zone-heavy system as a boundary guy. So he's one of those guys where, like, we have a good grade on him because we see him. We tried to project all these guys
to their
best grade in their best system.
Yep.
Yeah. So we see him as that grade in the system that he would function in as that zone boundary corner. But are we actually, if we're GMs, going to take him over a Fetu Melifonwu, who's just the better man corner but has the same grade as him? We're probably going to take Melifonwu. But if we're saying, hey, we need this exact role that Cam Bynum is perfect for, then we're going to put Bynum in that role.
That makes sense. Going back to when I was doing Scouting Academy, one of the things with our grading system is Dan Hatman actually even told me, he was like, all zone becomes man. So we don't, like, I was evaluating it, but I was evaluating it as part of other traits. On our scouting sheet, it was actually only man, and it was the ability to match and mirror, and then like stuff off of it, obviously. But I thought it blew my mind the first time he talked to me about that, because I was like, you know what? That makes a lot of sense, but I never thought about it. But I know a lot
I had never thought about it. I had never thought about it either until I was coaching high school football, and these high school DBs were asking me, like, oh, what do I do in zone coverage while I'm down the field? And I'm like, well, at that point, you're in man coverage. And that's like light bulb, boom. Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, can the Broncos do run a lot of zone match, and they run a lot of zone? Like, Fangio has a reputation, whether fair or not. His defense, going back forever, has always had a reputation that they don't need corners. And like quotation marks really heavy there. Obviously, I don't think that's true, but his defense does it. I think his defense places more emphasis on the safeties than it does the corners. But with that
Definitely.
In mind, yeah, and he also tends to take he tends to take a lot of guys who seem to fit as nickels for other schemes. I've noticed that too. Who stands out to you as other guys, having watched Fangio's defense now probably a decent bit? Who stands out to you guys as other corners that should jump out to Broncos country?
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Oh, well, so I've studied a ton of Fangio's time with the Niners, actually. So I'm well familiar with the days when they had Deshaun Golson.
Paris Cox.
And Dante Hittner. And Carlos Rogers, like, I'm very familiar with what you're putting down, with an emphasis on safeties and a de-emphasis on corners. And I think that's shown through with, like, Justin Simmons just absolutely producing as soon as Fangio got there. Like, you're absolutely hitting the nail on the head there. So I think you're right in terms of there is a potential de-emphasis on cornerbacks. And I think that might lead Broncos fans to be a little bit upset when the Broncos do potentially pass on a corner at 9 overall. But there's guys in the second round who I think the Broncos fans will be happy once they get there. You were saying a guy, he likes guys who are fits as nickels in other schemes. That's Elijah Molden to a T. Elijah Molden, the Washington kid, he's a guy that a lot of people like. He just really instinctual and great spatial awareness, which is perfect for that match. He's got really quick feet, and he can match up against those tight ends that the Broncos are going to need to match up with in the AFC West. So I think Elijah Molden in the second round could be a potentially pretty good guy. Paul, do you have one for him?
Oh, I absolutely do. And it's Sean Wade. There's a thing that I've noticed in the scouting community is a player starts shooting up the boards or has high expectations, but then the second he doesn't really meet those expectations, instead of going back down to like what he was like the previous year, he like goes down like all the way down. It's like it's written off the draft boards. I've seen some people call Sean Wade like a day three type prospect now. No, he's... When I was watching him, I really kind of thought that his decline was greatly exaggerated. One, in 2019, he looked very, very comfortable as a nickel. He looked very comfortable in man, like pressing on being up close on slot corners who are on the line. Just has incredible athleticism to just always be in the hip pocket of wide receivers. It was just that he was just on the wrong end of some contested catches. Like his ball skills weren't really there. And Dotson from Penn State just had some incredible catches that put on the highlight tape. And that's what everybody is seeing. And that's what the things are going off of. But when you have a corner who is that athletic and showed as a nickel that he can be productive, sure, he took a step back on as a wide corner, but I still think there is a chance that, one, you can draft him in the second or third round, have him be a nickel defender, and if he is able to work his way to being an outside corner, great. If he doesn't and he stays a nickel, an impact nickel for his rookie contract, that's still great because teams play nickel 4-2-5s and nickel packages 60 to 80% of the time. So I really feel that there would be value for Sean Wade in as like a second or third rounder, just off of his athleticism and his ability to limit separation with both speed and his general quickness.
And Joe, I'm going to give one guy who's a day three guy who I think does really fit the Broncos to a T, who's a guy who – this is a nugget for all the listeners out there of the guys you can expect to find in our book. Guy who is not on the boards of – almost all these draft picks. I can't speak for the ones, the guides who have like 500, 700 prospects. They probably have him. But these like 200 and 300 prospect guides, there's no way they're going to have a guy. Brandon Stevens out of Southern Methodist. So I was a scouting assistant at the College Gridiron Showcase this year. And Brandon Stevens, one of our duties as a scouting assistant is to get players for different scouts. Brandon Stevens was the most popular player in attendance at the College Gridiron Showcase. My man was dressed in a suit. He was interviewing every single team. Every team wanted to talk to him so badly that there were coaches that were upset. I would walk over to scouts and say, hey, anyone that I can get you? They would just grumble, Brandon Stevens isn't answering any of my texts, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, well, I know for a fact he's in like seven interviews. At one point, my roommate who was there with me as well, Robert Simpson, another scout who worked on this book as well, he had to tell scouts, hey, let this guy eat dinner. He's been interviewing for seven straight hours. Let him get over here to eat dinner before they close up shop. He had to like tell them to back up. And man, that guy. So after seeing that, we're like, who is this guy? Like we need to check him out. Like, let's get him in the book. We had one of our scouts watch him who wasn't there, so he wouldn't be biased at all. He had no idea that this was a popular guy. And we found out that Brandon Stevens, he was a UCLA running back who converted to corner when he came to SMU. And he seems, based on, I haven't watched this player personally, but I trust the scouts evaluation who did this very well. I've known him for a while. He's a guy who seems like he's a perfect fit in that Broncos scheme, where he's a big zone coverage guy who has great zone instincts to peel off his guys and make plays in other zones, carries his zone drops upfield really well, keeps his eyes on the QB and flows in the direction of the play. Very quick guy with good agility and just an instinctual guy with great ball skills. That seems like the type of guy you want in that you at least want to take a chance on day three in a scheme like Fangio's.
Definitely. Well, now I'm going to have to try and get some tape of him. So I appreciate that. Since we're in the DB room, so I figure we'll move to safety next, just because safety for me is one of the hardest things with most draft guys, because they'll give you a small glimpse of what the guy's role is, but a lot of times, unless it's really notable, it's like an afterthought. You get maybe a sentence about it, and you guys actually will say, like, he did split zone, he did free safety, he did extensive box work. Like, you'll actually have an idea of what he's doing, because Fangio runs a lot of too high. Like, Fangio and then Brandon Staley, now obviously with the Chargers, they were atypical compared to the rest of the league because of it. So the way that Fangio has evaluated safeties over the years, he got Adrian Amos, and I think I want to say the fifth round. I might be wrong. I think it was either the fifth or the sixth. But like, he's been able to steal safeties for a long time. But at the same time, he emphasizes them. When he was with the Niners, they took safeties in the second quite a bit. Like, it's an important position for his defense. And because Kareem Jackson's getting older and he's on an expiring contract, again, it's a short-term need because they don't have a lot of depth, but it's also a long-term need. I know the top of the class. I know a couple of the guys, but I want to hear what you guys think of the class as a whole, and then who jumps out at you as guys who could be good in a too-high scheme.
Sure. Paul, you want to take this one?
Well, the two guys I watched were definitely not good for a too-high scheme. One of the guys is probably not good in very many schemes. I had Trey Norwood, who I think kind of more fits maybe in kind of like that Sean, like a Sean Wade light. He was one of those guys who's really fast. He's got a corner build, but at safety can zoom all around the field, but couldn't tackle at all. Like, I watched the Iowa State game, and Charlie Kolar was just like manhandling him. It was like when you make the 99 overall player in Madden and you hit the truck stick, and yeah, it was like that bad tackling wise. But a guy that I'm not sure if he's a fit for the too high system, but it's a guy that we've been touting this whole entire process. When I first saw this report, I'm like, who is he and why does he have a borderline high second, early first round grade? And then lo and behold, after we get the report done and after we watch the film, everybody else starts getting to the film. He gets a Senior Bowl invite. He balls out, and that's Richie Grant.
We love Richie Grant.
Yeah, just from both as a box safety, as a free safety, we see him having just those really great instincts to be able to track the ball and just always know where the ball's going to go. A really good tackler, which is what you're going to need when you're only 200 pounds. And just kind of that coverage ability to either do well both in deep zones and in short zones. So it was like, we kind of found this guy that we feel is an all-around corner, and we are so happy when he goes to the Senior Bowl. And he was one of the guys who shot up the boards the most, and it was like, we already knew what he was.
Yep. Yeah, he's a guy who I don't know if early second might be a little high when the Broncos are on the board there, but it wouldn't even shock me at all if he went to the Broncos with that ninth pick in the second round. If you're looking for a guy in the third round, you might look to another guy who was at the Senior Bowl and really affirmed our good opinion of him, and that's Christian Uphoff, the Illinois State safety. Might be a little bit hard for Broncos fans to get some film on him, but when we watched him and took that tape on, he was 20 pounds lighter than he showed up to at the Senior Bowl. So I think he was listed at like 190. I think he gained 23 pounds before coming to the Senior Bowl with this season off, and he carried it well. He's a guy who he's got really good zone awareness, really good athleticism, comes downhill quickly. We liked his ability to impact at all three levels. We didn't think that this was a guy with a lot of weaknesses. We thought mainly his weakness really was tackling ability, which is tough, but I mean, prospects are going to have flaws once you get to that third and fourth round range. Mm-hmm. Another guy who's in there who we think is a versatile guy, who is a box guy, deep safety, slot guy, pre-snap communicator, athletic guy, who has a great tackler, is James Wiggins, the Cincinnati safety. And if you want to talk about safety aesthetic, man, if you just see a pic, I think our guy Mark Jarvis at What's on Draft on Twitter posted a picture of James Wiggins' aesthetic earlier today. I think he was watching him, and man, a swaggy looking player. He's a guy who really good anticipation, quick twitch guy, physical, spatially aware, gets through trash really well. His range is probably merely adequate, so he's not a guy who's impacting the third level a ton, but in that cover two or cover four scheme, this is a guy who I think can thrive, that you can get on in the third round or maybe even early in the fourth.
Another fun safety that I feel that we should talk about is Divine Diablo, Diablo.
However you say it.
Yeah. He's one of those tweener players where he's 6'3 and 3/8 and 226 pounds. So he wouldn't be out of place as a small linebacker.
Yeah, he's way bigger than Jeremiah Owusu-Koromoa, like way bigger.
Yeah, but he moves so well. Like, we gave him a 7 for three level impact. Like, we think he can impact in the run game. We think we can be smart or have an impact in the short passing game. And we think he, even though he's that big, we still think he has the range of a good NFL free safety. It's just he looks kind of clueless out there, and he just can't really swing his hips just yet in man coverage. So it's like you have a guy who has the size, speed, but if he can learn the game, he might have like that Pro Bowl potentially, might be kind of a guy for you, or he just can't figure it out on defense and whacks people on special teams. And I think you take in the third round.
Diablo is a guy who, he's one of the rare 6.0 grades that we got, which here's another spoiler of the book, but some intrigue to add. A 6.0 grade is that rare grade where we feel that this player has elite talent, but needs some time to refine something. So whether that's due to he didn't play much due to injuries, or something in the scheme was holding him back, or he needs to improve instinctually. It's someone that we think is a lower level guy right now coming into the league, but has these high end traits to maybe even be a Pro Bowler with some seasoning. So for Diablo, he's a guy that, I mean, the instincts may never come. He'll still be effective if they don't, because he's just so big and fast. But if they do, he's got that Pro Bowl potential. He's almost, in that way, while they're not all that similar players, but in that way, he's like Obi Melifonwu coming out, who was way overdrafted. I think teams have learned their lesson about that. But if you see Diablo early in the fourth round and your team takes him, you should be stoked as a fan, because you guys just got a guy who can be a core special teamer right now. And if he makes it, he's going to be great.
Well, and the one thing one thing that really stands out to me about Diablo with that situation then is he would be able to sit behind, potentially be able to sit behind Kareem Jackson. Justin Simmons probably isn't going anywhere. God help me if he does. And he'd be learning under Fangio and Ed Donatell for a year, and they're two of the better DB coaches around. So I would feel really good about that. Like, a raw guy who needs to kind of season, I'm cool with it if he has a year to season. Like, that sounds great.
He was one of, I think, 5 6.0s in the whole book, so it's not a very common grade that we gave out.
So one other need that's kind of like weird for the Broncos, and like there's actually a couple of these, but this one's really notable. The Broncos have Juwan James this year. He opted out last year. Because he opted out, his contract pushes forward. They can't cut him. It makes no sense to cut him, essentially. That said, they just gave Garrett Bowles an extension. So in 2022, they will probably have to move Juwan James because of cap stuff. So right tackle is kind of a need, plus depth at tackle is a need. So it's another one of those positions. My big question, again, this is something that I came up with when I've looked at a lot of guides, is a lot of guys will play left tackle, but you'll read in the guide, oh, he's probably a guard in the league. Or he'll be listed at tackle, and you'll say, oh, he can only be a right tackle. Your guys' guide actually says, like, he's played left tackle. We think he could probably switch to the other side. Or he played left tackle. He fits in a gap scheme. Or he played right tackle in a zone scheme. We think he could play either. Yeah, you guys actually lay that out. One of the things I have to ask is, if a guy played left tackle, how do you really determine how comfortable you feel with trying to project him to another side?
So if I'm projecting a guy, so like, go ahead, Joe.
I want to be full disclosure. I cheat. A lot of times what I do is, if he has experience playing somewhere else, it helps me a lot. Because again, like, if I don't get to see a lot of his film and I don't know, I'll watch footwork. But if I don't know, so.
Mm-hmm. So, exactly. With a guy like Rashawn Slater, where he was a left tackle in his previous season, but had played right tackle before, you feel pretty comfortable projecting him to that right tackle spot. I know some people are projecting him at guard, center. They might even project him at freaking tight end with the amount of different projections I'm seeing. But he's a right tackle for us. But guys, when you're projecting a guy to the other side, you don't exactly know. Like, a scout or a coach isn't going to exactly know how they project on the other side until they really get him in the building and work him at that side. Because if a guy's worked on one side his whole career, the kick slides are going to be entirely different. And not every guy can pick that up. Not every guy has the ability to just rework their entire, like, mental. Because these offensive linemen that have been playing left tackle their whole career, I mean, if you're playing left tackle your whole career in college, you're probably playing left tackle your whole time in high school too, and down on the line, unless you're coming from a power tackle scheme. Shout out to those split back Sphere teams that are no longer in existence. But I digress. That's one of the things that you don't exactly know, but one of the context clues is going to be, how nasty is this guy? Like, can he go from left to right? Is he a nasty guy? Is he a guy who I think I am comfortable with my running back going behind? That's usually one of the main things, is can this guy be like a true lead blocker? Left tackles, you really want them to be the guy who is the elite pass blocker. You want, I mean, obviously they're the blindside guy. So if you're looking at our sheet and we have a low reactive athleticism grade on the guy, we're probably not projecting him to stay at left tackle. That's really like how it is. Like, if their reactive athleticism is that low, we're probably putting him at guard. And one of the things I think we did well is we converted all those guards within the guide already.
Yes.
Like,
thank
if they
so
played
much.
Tackle in college, but we think he's a guard, he's already in there at guard. If we think he can stay at tackle, or even if we think that he has guard tackle flexion, is one of those things where if they're a swing guard and tackle, which is going to be necessary for most of the depth players in this league, because I mean, rosters are only 53 men and you can only keep like 8 to 9 linemen on most teams, which I really wish they could have more. Some guys carry 10. I don't think anyone carries 11, which is sad. But if, yeah, that reactive athleticism is the number one thing. And then really you want to see if they're going to play right tackle. Are they tenacious? Do they have the play strength for it? How good is their run block technique? Things like that.
So who, because I don't think granted, maybe Penei Sewell falls to 9 and the Broncos surprise the world and take him. But because Juwan James is there, I can't see them taking a right tackle at 9 unless it's Sewell. Maybe Slater, they would shock the world probably, because I was looking at Slater, whole thing. But on day 2, day 3, I think it's a pretty strong possibility because they have Mike Munchak. So even if a guy is a year away, they could feasibly take him. And if he pans out over the course of this year, they have a potential replacement. If not, they have a swing tackle, that kind of thing. Does anybody kind of jump out at you that kind of fits that mold?
Absolutely. I got someone for you. Deonte Smith, who's another guy who we were high on coming into the Senior Bowl, and he really reaffirmed our opinion of how much we liked him. And he got on the radar of a lot of people who didn't really love him. He's a guy who, if I'm just pulled up my summary, Deonte Smith is a scheme versatile, but projects best as a swing tackle in a gap heavy scheme with the potential to become a starting right tackle. That's exactly what you guys want. He's a guy who very long limbs. He's a little bit light for the position. He weighed in at 6.05, so 6'5" exactly, and 294 pounds. And he at times was even lighter than that at ECU, but he has the frame to add more. He just has a really skinny torso, which was very, very interesting to see in person. Not that his body type is necessarily bad, but he's a guy who probably needs to add 10 pounds, 15 pounds before you want to put him in as a starter. He's a guy who I gave fives and sixes to across the board. So for reference to the fans who haven't just rushed over and bought our guide after listening to the first 15 minutes of this, five is adequate for a backup, whereas six is a starter who helps his team win. So this guy has, he doesn't have any of these critical traits that I was, super worried about. His main problem was that he like will over rely on his length, but I mean, hey, you got the length, like what those length measurement numbers are really gonna, attract him to a lot of teams. I think this is a guy who is probably, gonna be a sleeper guy who people on the draft night on day two, late in the third round, in those comp picks around there, he's going to go. People are going to have no idea who he is, and he's going to have a long career as a swing tackle who can potentially start at right tackle.
I actually, going into this, I had him circled because I read your report earlier today. So is there anybody that jumps out to you, Paul?
Well, let's see. The tackle that I did who might be a fun guy for right tackle is Jackson Carman. Now, we also kind of have to do that projection where you he played left tackle his entire career. He was that five-star recruit who is just massive. Like, he's huge. I think he's going to probably come in at around 6'6", 340. Yeah, 6'5", 335 is what he was listed at. And yeah, he shows it sometimes. Like, there are just plays where he just wins just because he's bigger than and stronger than everybody else, and he doesn't really need to do anything more than that. And, like, that's, like, good for college, but his technique is just so not there yet. When he goes up to his second-level blocks, he's going to hesitate because he wasn't going to know whether to take the linebacker or move up to the safety. He's not going to have his hands in the right place. But when you have a guy who is that big, that strong, and that quick, because he moves very, very well laterally. Like, they'll run, like, schemes, screens and, like, sweeps his way. He will get out to the perimeter, and it's just like a train hitting somebody. It's just, he's a locomotive on a rail and just destroys whatever linebacker comes out there because he's just so comfortable in space. And those are really good, like, starting level. That's, like, a really good place to start. But even though he moves really well laterally, he doesn't really move that quickly backwards, which is what you need when you want to do vertical drop steps. And he really just doesn't have that flexibility that, say, another large player like Orlando Brown would have. He can get his helmet a little, he can have his pads a little too high and can get beaten underneath.
Do you think some of that is coachable, or do you think that that's just going to always be an issue for him?
Well, that's one of those difficult things. Yeah, there's a reason we have a full section for every player of what we need to learn about, because as a scout, you have what you see on film. There's a whole bunch of stuff they're not going to be asked to do that they're going to be able to be able to do to succeed at the NFL level, and we're only going to have a part of a picture. And I would rather say, I don't know if this guy can do that because I don't know, rather than just say he can't do that because I've never seen it. Well, so,
and that's, again, that's one of those things too that I really like about your guide. Tim Jenkins does a lot of quarterback stuff, and one of the things he did a guide on Trey Lance a while back that I read, And I loved it for one of the similar reasons that with this is he mentioned things you need to see in a workout. And granted, this year, because workouts are so kind of tossed out because of COVID, it just becomes a giant unknown. But you have to admit that you don't know. I think admitting that is important because otherwise you have confidence in something that you're just guessing on. So I think the fact that you have something you need to see more of and you're kind of open about that is important.
Mm-hmm. When we've shown this to scouts and directors of personnel on NFL teams and coordinators and whatnot, and shown them our format in general, that's the thing that they liked the most, is that we had that what we need to learn section, that we didn't just assume things about players based on other, we didn't try to use context clues necessarily. We acknowledged that those context clues were there, but we were not going to be definitive about things that we hadn't seen. And those scouts really appreciated that because that's something that they do. They have to say, hey, coach, I haven't seen this, when they're reporting back to their coaches to make the decision that I haven't seen this. So we need to know da da da. Paul, what's the example that you typically use for this?
Oh, I use there's two I always use. It was probably some draft pundit. I'm not sure if it was Miller or just like one of the mainstream ones. He was like, big concern with this guy is he can't catch. And then I like go and check on PFF or the stats. I'm like, he had 10 targets. How do you know he can't catch? And then the other big one was last year when everybody was like jumping on Justin Herbert and saying that he's going to be a bust. And they were saying, oh, all he does is throw screens and he doesn't go through progressions. And I came to the conclusion that, or I figured out that the college coaches are not training their players to get to the NFL. They are teaching them how to win right now in their system. So there's going to be a whole bunch of things, especially for quarterbacks, that oh yeah, he doesn't go through progressions. Well, the scheme isn't asking him to go through progressions. Oh, he throws a lot of schemes. Well, they probably, because they have some pretty good playmakers out there, and they think they can win on the outside with those plays, or they have checks in their offense. When they see this look, they automatically call the screen to the outside. So I just saw this, and everyone was like saying that these things are weaknesses, and I'm like, no. And then lo and behold, he goes into the NFL, and he's asked to do different things, and wait, he actually has some competency in that, and he kind of showed it. And that's kind of why I feel it's very important to say those kind of things. And that's something I'm very proud of, because as far as I know, that is an original idea that I had. That was like something I've took that I don't think any other scout has ever done. And that was like, that's where I feel I've laid my biggest fingerprint on this guide, is putting that in the format. Well,
let's say no other scout that is not in the NFL.
Yes, no, like no media scouts, none of the people that, yeah.
Well, and I think your point too is an important one, because I can't watch Ohio State and not come away being like, they're running a college scheme. Like on both sides of the ball, they do. And granted, it works for them, and a lot of the stuff, like some of the stuff translates, but Baron Browning, like you can't watch Baron Browning and think his role is going to be completely different in the NFL than it is at Ohio State. But no, with Baron Browning in mind, though, where are you guys at with the linebackers? Because that's the other defensive position. And it's kind of weird because Denver has Alexander Johnson, who is an elite run defender, pretty damn good. And when he came in onto the scene in 2009, he was pretty good in coverage. But I think, and again, I think the Broncos basically admitted as much last year, they want a coverage backer to go with him. Like, they tried to trade for Patrick Queen before the Ravens got him. At one point, they tried to sign Joe Schobert before he ended up signing. At one point, they were pursuing Corey Littleton. I know Christian Kirksey from the Packers. He just got cut. The Broncos were sniffing around him for the same reasons. So, again, assuming that George Payton doesn't completely change the scale here, I think they're chasing a coverage backer. I don't know necessarily if it's going to be at 9, but are there any guys that kind of jump out to you that really stand out as somebody who could be a good coverage backer?
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I mean, yeah, there's So with this class, I'm really the linebacker guy for us. With this class, there's a couple good guys up top. Really, the only guys that we see as first round players are Micah Parsons and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. We're actually a lot lower on Zaven Collins than most other people. We like Nick Bolton.
You're speaking to the choir here. I am lower on Zaven Collins as well.
We have Zaven Collins with, I think, a third round grade, which people, I mean, we don't grade by the third round, but he on our big board, he would be a third round guy. But there's a collection of guys in that 6.3 to 6.1 range for us that we think are just ideal coverage linebackers in today's NFL scheme. I'll just run through a list. Jabril Cox out of LSU really proved it at the Senior Bowl.
That's my boy.
Chaz Surratt, he's a guy who could have come out last year, probably didn't improve on his stock all that much this year, although he did improve his instincts. His Virginia Tech film was the worst I've ever seen of any linebacker. He just got absolutely demolished by Darisaw. So he was a guy who I was super high on. I watched that film as like one of the like three or four that I watched this year to like update my understanding of him. And I was like, oof, like it just showed every single problem that he has, like in pursuit, navigating through traffic while block shedding, like everything. But he's a guy who can be a high end pass coverage guy day one. It just don't ask him to set the point of attack or shed a block. But then guys like Garrett Wallow, who were higher on than other people, he's a really athletic safety convert from TCU, who another guy who's not great at block shedding, but just lean, athletic, aggressive, good communicator, great in space, sideline to sideline, good pass coverage. Pete Werner, Ohio State, another really good pass coverage linebacker who, I forget who Shay compared him to. Oh, she compared him to a lesser Matt Milano, which would be a great addition for the Broncos.
I would take a Matt Milano.
Yeah, you would. Anyone would take a Matt Milano. And then one of the guys who no one has graded him as a linebacker except us, but I like him as a linebacker, and that's Talanoa Hufanga.
I saw that.
USC safety. Yeah, us having him at linebacker is a little crazy, but
Well,
we think that he's a guy who's really that coverage linebacker. Like, he really should be in that role. We don't see him as a safety at the next level. We see him as a guy who, I mean, that role is becoming more and more popular. I think Raiders have Jeff Heath as a linebacker this year, and they really like that safety linebacker guy coming on in those, like, hybrid dime nickel packages where you keep one linebacker on and bring that second guy who's just great in space. That's a role that the Broncos definitely could use with all the tight ends. I mean, we've been talking about how to go against the tight ends in this division. Like, there's no one guy. You're not drafting one of these linebackers and then like, boom, that's it. Like, now we can cover Travis Kelce and Darren Waller because we got this guy. Like, there's no guy like that. It doesn't exist. Like, if someone like that existed, that'd be the prototype, and we'd like be like, hurrah, everyone that is this prototype, we love him now. But if you have a couple of these guys in, that'll help.
I was going to say, if Micah Parsons could like fuse into Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, then maybe just combine their skills and powers.
But no, I thought so. As far as joke goes, because a lot of Broncos country really likes him for that same reason that you just mentioned, that he can erase Travis Kelce. I wonder for the, and again, like I'm going to ask you because you probably watch more of him than I have. Well, I know you've watched more of him than I have. I've had trouble getting his tape. The Broncos do run like 65% of the time they're nickel. So I think that he could have a role. I have questions about how he'd fit if they're ever brought into a base 3-4. That's a question.
Yeah.
For him. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No.
I was going to say, I think that JOK is a guy who changes the complexion of your defense because now you're basing out of nickel. If he's your third linebacker, he's going to play as your rover. So like, you don't really need to have a nickel guy out there because he can facilitate both roles. He's a guy who, like, some teams are going to pass on just because they're not willing to change their defense to put him in that scheme. Like, I've compared the role that he should have to the role that the Panthers put Jeremy Chinn in this year, where they really played to all of his strengths. They put him in as that rover box linebacker slot safety hybrid. And if you're willing to play him in that role, he's going to succeed. If you're trying to pigeonhole JOK as a will backer in a traditional 4-3 and you're putting him in the box, like, he's going to struggle to shed blocks and you're not playing to his strengths at all, where you're not putting him in a position to use his amazing play speed. But you want him to be on that edge. Like, if he's a blitzer, if he's covering in the pass, if he's a weak side pursuer, like, that's where you want him. So I think that putting him as a rover, like, it's going to force a DC to be really creative. I'm not sure a guy like Fangio would be willing to do something like that. I mean, Fangio's, like, it's one of those, like, defensive coordinators, you can teach an old dog new tricks, because defensive coordinators have to adjust on the fly to the offenses that they've seen. And if you're a DC that can't learn new tricks, then you've been out of the league for years now at this point. But I don't see Fangio willing to change his scheme so drastically to have this guy. Like, and if you're going to draft him early in the first, like, I'm assuming that the Broncos would be trading back to take him and not taking him at 9. If you're doing that, like, you're saying, we're taking this player in the first round, we're investing that he's going to be a pillar of our defense.
Yep.
And that's one of those things where I can't see Vic Fangio doing that.
It was one of the big questions I had about Isaiah Simmons last year. Was I feel like Isaiah Simmons' ideal role is a similar situation. And I didn't know if the Broncos were going to take him that high and then do that. And then I was like, well, if they're going to play him inside in the box and make him play, I feel like it might be not a wasted pick, but it's not ideal. Like, you're not setting him up for success to make the most of what you're picking him to do.
Well, and that's the thing. They don't have, like, Isaiah Simmons at least has the build to do that. Not that putting him in that role is ideal for him, but, like, he can do that. Like, that's not something that you want 6'1", 215 pounds, soaking wet Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah to be doing.
Yeah.
Another thing that I saw was a Jim Nagy tweeted out that if you're considering taking JOK, you need to talk to your defensive coordinator and you need to know that he has a plan for it before you take him, which I thought was right. But there were a lot of people in the comments who are like, no, the defensive coordinator should just take a super talented player and build that team around him. And I don't think people understand, like, how big of a shift that would be, or they just think that, oh, you can just draft that guy and just have him change positions all the time based on the situation without knowing how difficult it is to learn one position and know the checks at one position, let alone go to multiple positions. And I think they're like, these hybrid linebacker safeties are almost always everybody's on draft Twitter's favorite players. But in order to be a true, like, jack of all trades, you need to have, like, the instincts and the mind power to be able to understand multiple positions, multiple roles, and multiple formations. And as we kind of saw with Isaiah Simmons, that can be a lot. He didn't see, like, the field until the second half of the year, because he has the ability to do a lot. But if he can't mentally process a lot, then you're just going to have a fast player playing slow.
Yep.
That right, Searle?
Yeah, absolutely. I have slight connection with the Cardinals franchise, and I've been told by guys within their organization that they had just given him so much to do in the offseason with so little time. From what people in the Cardinals org have told me, Isaiah Simmons was just swimming in work that they gave him. Like, they gave him so many different positions to learn before the season. And with such an abbreviated offseason, with all of what everyone's been dealing with, we all know why it's been an abbreviated offseason. He just had trouble even understanding one position, let alone the four different spots that they wanted to put him in. So I would expect him next year to come in with a better understanding of their scheme, a better understanding of what they want him to do, and a better understanding of the speed of the NFL game, I think that we'll start to see him be more of an impact consistently.
I do too. When again, this is an aside off that, but when Isaiah Simmons was drafted, everyone, a lot of Broncos Twitter was basically like, oh, Vance Joseph is going to ruin him. He you know, he's going to break him. And it's like in 2018, Will Parks looked like a sleeper potential Pro Bowler down the road, playing a role that I saw as kind of like the perfect fit for Isaiah Simmons. It just didn't happen his rookie year. So like, hearing that from you, like, that gives me a lot of hope for him, because I do like him as a prospect. I just didn't know if I liked him for the Broncos defense. So Von Miller's status is obviously kind of the biggest question. And again, if he gets cut over this next couple of days, I will probably change that. But Von Miller's status is like kind of a looming huge question over the Broncos. And honestly, like, I don't think you can replace him anyway. But the Broncos, even if they keep him on the roster, he's coming off a serious injury, didn't play last year. He's older. His contract runs out after the year. So again, it's another one of those positions where it's a short-term need potentially because they need depth, but also definitely a long-term need depending on what they do with Von Miller. I really like this edge class. I don't know if necessarily there's a Chase Young or a Joey Bosa or anything like that at the top. I like Quiddy Pay a lot, but I don't know if he's necessarily on that same tier as those guys in my mind. But In terms of Fangio fits, though, I think this class is pretty deep. There's a lot of guys who can play in space. And that's an important factor to what Fangio actually asks his linebackers to do. And I've actually just started looking at a Fangio playbook. He designates the positions down like a 4-3. Like, he has essentially what is an end, and then he has a guy who plays as a backer. And you see that on the field. Bradley Chubb plays in space every once in a while, but he's essentially a defensive end. And then you see Malik Reed, and Malik Reed will actually move out with slot receivers occasionally, and he'll be out there in space covering them in a short zone. I assume that they would be looking for a guy to play that role if they move on. Mm-hmm. Who jumps out to you as like a quote unquote like a super Malik Reed or a Malik Reed type?
I got a super Malik Reed for you, who fits that role and who also could maybe be there in the second round. And that's Joseph Asai out of Texas. He's a guy who had a lot of coverage reps last year before changing his position this year. And he is the guy who I think has the highest motor in the draft. This is a guy who, if you bring him into your system, he's going to immediately just make your team so much faster. I was sending Paul just clip after clip after clip while I was watching him a couple weeks ago of just, this is a crazy motor play that you wouldn't see someone make. This is a crit just over and over. And, I talked with Pat Flaherty, who is a two-time Super Bowl winning offensive line coach, the other day, and we watched a couple different edge prospects. And even from the limited clips that we watched, he was like, yeah, this guy's motor is crazy. So he's one of those guys who you want him as that 3-4 outside linebacker type, probably, because he does have the coverage chops. He's best suited in a pass rush role. So, like, get him in a pass rush role as soon as possible. He's got great upfield burst, good mental processing, good tackling. I think that it's a guy who doesn't have a lot of weaknesses besides the fact that he's not super stout at the point of attack. So I think if you take him slightly off ball like that, that's not as big of a weakness. So he's a guy who I think if he's there in the second round, he'd be an optimal fit for the Broncos.
There are so many good, like, undersized pass rushers in the second to fourth rounds this year. Just, like, I'm just going through and, like, looking at how many players we gave, like, a 6-4 of sufficient to start and win with at the NFL level. And there's so many people that you have to choose from. A guy I did was Jalen Phillips. I'm sure you guys have probably been mocked to him at that 209 pick. Yep. I did him, and you can see that 99th percentile athlete, but he's got 4 concussions in his career. I wouldn't touch him personally, and his instincts, and he's kind of a one-year wonder. Like, yeah, when he's just let loose to be a super athlete, yeah, he's going to do super athlete things. But North Carolina ran for like 300 yards going his direction. So, there's definitely some issues. I do not view him as a first rounder on tape, but when you take in his injury history, then that's a guy I would avoid. Quincy Roche looked really good at the Senior Bowl, just giving Alex Leatherwood fits on reps.
When I was watching Phillips, I kept coming away thinking Quincy Roche actually makes more sense for the Broncos. So, like,
yeah, he's that 3-4 outside linebacker.
Yep, I love him.
But Roche, that's the thing, is he doesn't have a lot of experience in pass coverage. So that's one of the things that we would need to learn about him before he becomes that 3-4 outside linebacker. He's just too light at this point. He weighed in at 243 at just a hair under 6'3". So, like, he's a very light prospect. So he makes a lot more sense in that 3-4 outside linebacker role. I watched him recently all the way through, and I think that he's an awesome pass rusher who should only be on the field on pass rush situations. And I think that putting him as a more situational guy is going to be better off, because this guy was one of the lowest motor players that I've seen. So I think that in terms of, like, consistent effort, it's not really there for him. So I think he's going to be very good in a very, like, defined role as a pass rusher, but I don't think I see him going outside of that. So he's a guy who you'll have a niche for. He can be on your team for a while, but he's not going to be a pillar of your organization.
He's one of those guys I like in terms of, like, they extend Von Miller. They have Bradley Chubb on a fifth year option, probably extending him. Malik Reed, if they do that, Malik Reed is playing out one more year on an RFA tag and he's gone. Roche would come in as, like, essentially the third guy, and I like that. I have quite, yeah. One guy I have to ask you about, Cyril, because I know you were the one to write the report on, is Rashad, Hamilcar Rashad. What do you think of him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has the weirdest name. It's Hamica.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I read all
yeah,
these
no things. Worries.
I don't hear him.
No worries. I would have had no idea. I originally picked him because I was like, oh, he's got an awesome name and he had a ton of production.
That jumped out to me too.
Yeah. But this year, his production dropped off a cliff. I think he had 0 sacks this year, if I'm not mistaken. And one of the reasons for that is he gained a considerable amount of weight. So he wasn't quite as explosive. He weighed at the Senior Bowl at 254 after he was listed at 238. This past season. So he's a guy who gained a lot of weight, but I mean, when we're talking about that 3-4 outside linebacker, like, this is the guy. Like, while we don't have pass coverage in our primary and secondary traits, like, this guy's a very good pass coverage guy. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, he can track with fast running backs out to the flat very easily, which is, like, almost like the top of what a 3-4 outside linebacker is going to be asked to do. Like, within what pass coverage roles he'd be asked, he'd be phenomenal at those. I think one of the things that we need to know if this guy's peaked or not, and if he can still maintain that explosiveness at this 245 or 254-pound weight, because, I mean, speed and length was how he mostly – made his money. Like, he was shedding blocks, keeping those long arms out. He had a good mixture of pass rush moves and an adequate bull rush, but he's not a guy who was, like, winning with strength overall, like, by any means. It wasn't a guy who showed me a ton of toughness either. Like, I thought that he would shy away from the more physical aspects of the game a little bit, which is something that worries you a little bit. But I think that a guy who can come in and be a low-end starter for you. I don't see, like, super high-end traits for him overall, unless, like, he can really rediscover his form. But even then, when I originally watched him, I noticed that, like, his pressure rate was totally unsustainable. So I expected a drop in production this year, but I didn't expect, like, it to fall off a cliff. And I know from scouts that I've talked to, they're going to take the 2021 or the 2020 season a little bit with a grain of salt, for the guys who really fell off, because for a lot of guys like Rashad or like Amir Smith-Marset, there's like extenuating circumstances that can come into play. And so I think that he's going to have a lot of questions to answer in interviews that are going to define what his stock ultimately ends up as, whether he's a day two or a day three guy in the eyes of teams. But I mean, for a 3-4 team that doesn't need him to start right away, I think he could be a pretty good fit for the Broncos.
Paul, is there anybody else that I need to hear about?
Do you want to hear about Ellerson Smith? Okay. Ellerson Smith is probably one of the strangest reports, or one of the more interesting ones, because when I was originally watching him, he looked like a stick. It was like, he's 6'4". He's super long, super lean. And I heard inside rumors that in 2019, he was playing at around 6'6", 230. And he was just had no strength. Like, he could bull rush like a little bit, like, but once a blocker got onto him in the run game, he was toast, and he was toast against FCS teams. And then he comes into the Senior Bowl at 262. So it was like everything I saw was like, I don't want to say invalidated, but it's like now he had 30 pounds on him, and he's a completely different human being. But yeah, he's one of those guys who has an incredible first step, an incredible length. And if you think that you can take a guy who has those two traits and mold that into a situational pass rusher, then that's a guy for you to target in the late rounds, especially if he can run in like the 4.7s, 4.6s at his current listed weight, and he can kind of prove that he's like that freak athlete at Northern Iowa. And I mean, Northern Iowa, they have a really great weight program. They had Spencer Brown as kind of a very high-end athlete. They are kind of developing a reputation as being the freak FCS factory. They got another guy, Isaiah Weston, for next year, 6'4", 210, wide receiver, who apparently runs pretty well. So if you want to take a shot at a freak, that can be a spot for you.
Last thing before I let you guys go, assuming it's not a quarterback, who is the ideal pick at 9 for the Broncos?
Oh, the ideal pick at 9.
And be prepared, because people might get mad at you if you don't answer what they say. No pressure.
All right. I don't know who the ideal pick is. We are doing a mock draft with the XTB team where we've assigned players, or we've assigned scouts to be the GMs of these teams. And awesome. They're going to be reporting on the team needs of everyone. So that's going to be part of version 2 of our book. We're going to have all of what we think the biggest team needs are. And we're going to have what schemes they run, what their draft tendencies have been, things like that, so that we can really educate everyone. And in terms of like the casual fan can see like, oh, I don't know what the Panthers might do at 8 right before. What have their tendencies been? Your Broncos fan can find out what the Panthers might do. But I will say that the guy who in our rolling mock right now, which is nearing the end of the third round, I'll give you all of who the Broncos have taken at 9. We don't even have it listed what the number is, but I'll give you the Broncos round 1, 2, and 3 picks that we have so far.
Please do.
We have Micah Parsons at 9.
Okay.
Which some Broncos fans will be stoked on, and some will curse our names.
I'm not going to curse the name, but it's a little bit of a kind of a feeling, but not at
totally
you.
Totally understandable.
I'm one of those guys that I don't like positional value of linebacker in the top 10, but that's a
hey man. I think that Micah Parsons could fit in that freaking Von Miller role almost. Like, I think he's that type of player. I think he could play any linebacker spot.
And I mean, if he does, like, I like it a lot more.
Exactly. I mean, if you're keeping Von Miller and you're putting him there and an inside linebacker and like switching him off there, like, love that at 9. In the second round, Kelvin Joseph, who is a guy that his nickname is Boss Man Fat, guy that a lot of people are starting to finally get eyes on. Super athletic guy, but You know, I'm not actually sure if I love him there because I've heard that he's a better second and third level guy than a first level guy. And if you guys are running that much cover too, Kelvin Joseph may not be the right pick there. But then in the third round, Richard LeCount, who's perfect for that two high scheme out of Georgia.
It's one way to make the defense younger for sure. And again,
absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time. Like I said, guys, if you have not already in the time listening to this gone and got, if listening to this, you guys have not actually gone and bought the draft guide yet, go buy it now. It's at expandtheboxscore.com. You'll see the draft guide, purchase it. I cannot recommend it enough. Also make a point to follow them on Twitter. Cyril is at CYRILPENN4. Paul is the foot Paul, the FOOTPAUL. Thank you so much for your time, guys. It was a blast.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank
you. Appreciate it.